the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program. We are broadcast today live from the floor of the Southern Baptist Convention. The noise you hear is the noise of a very busy exhibit hall where several thousand messengers and guests are gathered together. This is the season for denominational meetings, not by coincidence, but just by the necessity of the schedule. Most major denominations hold their meetings during the summer. The Southern Baptist Convention is one of the earlier of those meetings, but in coming days, over the summer weeks, there will be the meetings of the Presbyterian Church USA, of the Presbyterian Church in America, of the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America, you name it. It's going to be an alphabet soup of American denominations meeting over the next several weeks, and almost every one of those meetings is consequential. We're going to be talking today about how we arrived at a denominational reality in America. I received a question, a very perceptive question from a young man who wrote me saying, how is it that we ended up with all these different denominations? We're going to have a great discussion about that. And very glad to have as my guest today Dr. Russell Moore, Dean of the School of Theology and Vice President at the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary, my very, very cherished colleague who today addressed the Pastors' Conference of the Southern Baptist Convention. I'm going to ask him to talk about that in just a moment. But as we get started, let me just tell you, if you have a question about American denominational life, about American denominations, and you want to get that question before me, email me at mail@albertmohler.com. Go to Twitter /AlbertMohler or Mohler Radio, at Facebook, the Albert Mohler Program, and you can call the program. And at 877-893-8255, we'll be glad to hear from you. And right now, I want to turn to a couple of issues in the news. President Obama has announced that he's going to be addressing the nation tomorrow night from the Oval Office. That's a fairly unprecedented kind of address for a president. He's going to be speaking in this case about an environmental issue, and that is the catastrophe in the Gulf of Mexico. The Obama administration has decided to express and describe this reality now as an epidemic. That is, quote, "This is an ongoing crisis," said David Axelrod, Mr. Obama's senior strategist, "much like an epidemic." Here's what caught my attention today, and I had not known of this. It turns out that just one beach, Alabama's Orange Beach, has now accumulated a 4-inch thick layer of oil. That, frankly, on that scale, was unknown to me until I just read this. Russell Moore is a native of the Gulf. He was just down in the Gulf and has written about this. Russ, 4 inches of oil?
Yeah, and the entire coastline from Louisiana all the way to Florida is bracing and waiting to see what's going to happen. All the way over to the Keys, frankly, because the Gulf Stream could take it around. No one knows what to predict, and so everything is paralyzed until it comes ashore.
A couple of things that surprised me in this story, and by the way, this story is coming, it's Dateline by Giles Whittle in Washington. It's of the Times, though, in London. The British press has been pretty aggressive on this because, of course, BP stands for British Petroleum.
Right.
And there are a couple of things in here that are of interest to me. It says that they now acknowledge they could actually accumulate more of the 40,000 barrels a day coming from the ruptured well, but there's nowhere to put it. And then it goes on to say the extra tankers will not arrive in the area until next month. I mean, this is just shocking.
It is, and there's all kinds of government regulations that have to be changed in order to get, for instance, foreign crafts here. We need skimmers from all over the world in the Gulf of Mexico immediately to be able to do this. And so the Congress needs to exempt the Gulf from the Jones Act and other legislation to allow that to take place.
Well, apparently, with the president deciding to speak from the Oval Office, there's an acknowledgement now coming from the White House that this is an issue of grave national concern, and I guess many Americans are saying it's about time.
It is about time. Yeah,
this happened.
And I've been very critical of President Obama, but I am glad to see him taking the gravity and the seriousness of this and look forward to what he'll say tomorrow night.
Well, this is a big risk for the White House, because once you hold an address like this, the White House is buying the problem politically,
right.
and they're going to own the problem, and it'll be interesting to see what they do from this point onward. Very interesting article in the New York Times. It's one of those articles that tells us how the political winds are changing. You may know that over the last 2 years, the Gallup organization has revealed that for the first time since 1973, a majority of Americans describe themselves as pro-life in some form. Now, every time you talk about these issues, you've got to footnote exactly what people are saying, but nonetheless, it is understood to be very significant, and I think, of course, very hopeful that for the first time since 1973, in the last 24 months, a majority of Americans have identified themselves as being pro-life. Ramesh Pranuru, writing in the New York Times, talks about the year of the pro-life woman. And this is what's really interesting. Back in 1992, it was declared to be the year of the woman in the United States Congress because of so many elected at one time. But now there is an enormous core of women who are holding major party nominations and are running for statewide office who are clearly pro-life. And this is a new reality. If you go back to the signing of the Partial Birth Abortion Amendment Act, one of the things that really drew a lot of attention was the fact that all the legislators in the room for that signing were male. And this gave Speaker of the House Nancy Pelosi an opportunity to take a shot, saying, well, you know, obviously the women are not into this and supporting this, otherwise they would be in the room. This is literally a room changer in terms of what could be happening here. And also, I appreciate the fact that Carly Fiorina in California, who has the Republican Party nomination there for Barbara Boxer's seat as it's currently held, is becoming more pro-life as the campaign goes on. And that's a good sign. And I hope it is a harbinger of things to come. Talking about a harbinger of things to come, we've been talking about this quite a bit on the program because we're getting all this information in anticipation of the 2010 census. That data will not be really available to us in raw form until next year, but there are already some reports coming out that are very interesting. The growth in the United States population is right now basically driven by minority births. And what we're looking at is a change in the United States that is going to show up literally everywhere. We talked in this program about 3 weeks ago about the fact that there's a huge generational divide. For the first time in American history, the ethnic makeup of generations is changing dramatically. And what we're going to end up in this country with, and this is, I think, for Christians, a matter of tremendous interest, I should see it as opportunity, where we're going to have a very multicultural, multi-ethnic generation of teenagers and young adults coming very quickly. And as this one article in the Financial Times pointed out, we're going to have a reality of an aging white population and a very energetic and young ethnic population. And it's going to be interesting how this comes, but now USA Today is reporting that 49% of U.S. births in the year ending July 1, 2009 were defined as minority births. That's 49%. And their birth rate is considerably higher in those groups than what is described here as the Caucasian or white population. So this means that's just a sign of things to come. The population is changing to minority from the bottom up, said Kenneth Johnson, a demographer at the University of New Hampshire at the Carsey Institute there. You know, Russ, when I think about this, I have to say, I wonder, even as we're talking about American denominations today, how many denominations are actually reading the demography?
And that's true in liberal denominations and conservative denominations where you have a bunch of old white people. Right. And so the churches that are going to be and the denominations that are going to be able to actually impact the next generation with the gospel are going to have to start looking differently than they look right now.
Well, and they are going to look different, you know, whether we ask
or they won't
or not.
Exist.
That's right. That's right. But one of the interesting things that has been noted by many of these folks, and I don't mean this in a self-congratulatory way for evangelicals, but more as a sense of opportunity, is that these ethnic populations are not drawn to liberal Protestant denominations.
Right.
They're not showing up in the liberal Protestant denominations. They do not recognize in that message anything that is compelling to them. What's compelling is the gospel.
That's right. And I think what's going to be the key here is for those older white leadership in denominations to start seeing ethnic minorities not as being a mission of our group, but in leadership in our group. That's what's going to be the shift.
Absolutely.
That needs to take place.
I love this story. It gets right to the heart of so much that I end up talking about. I received an email from someone the other day who said, thank you for talking so much about young men growing up and getting married because of what that does in their lives, and frankly, what not getting married also does to their lives. But now you have USA Today out with a very interesting story about the fact that young fathers almost instantly become much more cautious. For instance, dads report that they now will lose weight, will stop smoking, will, I love this, this is like, young adult health commitment here, will stop bungee jumping once they become fathers. One man said that he no longer runs yellow lights. And it's really, really interesting because this is another indication of what marriage and fatherhood does in a man's life.
Yeah.
It literally is the great maturing transformation, because once you are a husband, that's one change. But once you are a father, boy, is that a change in gravity.
Yeah. I still bungee jump, but I do think that it's an important thing to note. And if you think about what happens when these kids go on for so long without getting married, without settling down, the kind of life change that takes place.
Yeah, well, here's the deal. Get an education, get a job, get married, have children, buy a house, pay a mortgage. Your life gets centered real quickly. And then decide what in the world you can do for your life to make a difference for Jesus. 30. Raise those children in the nurture and admonition of the Lord and become a world changer. This is the Albert Miller Program. We're live today from the Exhibition Hall of the Southern Baptist Convention, and we're going to be back in just a moment to talk about how in the world we ended up with all of these denominations, an alphabet soup in America of denominations, not exactly the same thing as some other places. We're going to talk about why that is so and why it matters and what we ought to be looking for as all these denominations are going to be meeting over the summer, coast to coast, and with listeners around the world. You're listening to the Albert Miller Program. Welcome back to the Albert Miller Program. Here we're live on the Exhibition Hall of the Southern Baptist Convention. We're here on the floor meeting. We have a live studio audience and lots of folks walking by. That noise you hear is the noise of Southern Baptists chattering as they're going around from booth to booth, checking out what's going on. And that's a lot of what happens at a convention. You know, there's this kind of necessary public space where people gather together. They just have an opportunity to catch up with one another and to find out what their denomination's doing. My guest today is Russ Moore, who is Dean of the School of Theology at the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and Vice President for Academic Administration. You know him as a frequent guest host of this program. Russ, we're going to be talking about how we end up with denominations because, you know, Sidney Mead, the late historian of American religion, said that denominationalism is the shape of religion in America, and that's really true.
Yeah, well, it is because there's not much of an alternative. Anytime you got a group of churches who are going to do anything, they're going to work together, and they're going to find like-minded people to work together with.
That's right.
And so even some of these churches that think of themselves as non-denominational, they're still working with other non-denominational churches to do denominational-like things.
Well, one of those denominations had a newsletter that went out last week. I happened to see on my way here. Mm-hmm. And someone said, let's just be honest. If our goal was not to be a denomination, we failed.
We failed. Yeah,
because we are
one. You have to. I mean, denomination literally just means a name you're giving to something.
That's right.
To distinguish
you
from
denominate
somebody else, yeah. And that's you have to cooperate together as churches, and you find churches that are like-minded. And that's one of the reasons why this is kind of a, at the Southern Baptist Convention, kind of like a family reunion of people
that's
who
right.
haven't seen each other in a while, because you're in cooperation for missions, and that's what it is.
You know, a lot of people look at this. I think that's what was prompting this young man to write me the letter, because he's just kind of sitting back, looking at this, saying, okay, over here we got Presbyterians, we got Baptists, we got Lutherans. And by the way, talking about Baptists, there are like 880 different Baptist groups somewhere
sure.
in America,
yeah.
Including the Duck River, Little Duck River Baptist
right.
Association,
mm-hmm.
the Two-Seat
in
the Spirit, Predestinarian yeah. Baptists, you got it, then, you know, me and my first cousin, I think, Baptist Convention some places. But then you've also got, you got Presbyterians about the same situation,
oh,
Lutherans
yeah.
just slightly different. As Sidney Mead makes an argument, and when I thought of answering this to him, man, I wanted to tell him something. I think Mead's exactly right. Remember where I was sitting as a student reading his book when it hit me? This is exactly right. He said, denominations are what happens at the collision of conviction and religious liberty.
Mm.
And he said, look, he said, the reason why if you go to Germany and some of the other places you don't find so much is because, let's remember, the German Reformation happened because a prince said, we're Catholic yesterday, we're Lutheran today.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the entire mm-hmm. German state was mm-hmm. just changed over. Where you have a state religion, well, it's a little different. It's very different. But, you know, even where that happens, it doesn't hold. For instance, in Britain, you have a very historic state church, but they have as many different denominations now as we do here.
Oh, yeah. And even within that state church, they do.
That's right.
So that you have some people who are very Catholic in the way they approach it, some people who are almost like a revivalist evangelicals. And
that's right.
It's just necessary. You have to do it.
You know, the Southern Baptist Convention is going to be faced with an interesting choice, a very historic moment, I think. Something known as the Great Commission Resurgence is really coming to a culmination here with a report about some changes and things. But, you know, the purpose of the Southern Baptist Convention had to be taken on by any group that would consider this. And, you know, we basically had to ask some fundamental questions. Why a Southern Baptist Convention? You go back to 1845, and those messengers who gathered in Augusta, Georgia over 150 years ago said it was to elicit, combine, and direct the energies of the churches for the Great Commission. And so you look at that and you say, well, that makes perfect sense. Basically, I think that's pretty much the only reason why there's any reason for a Southern Baptist Convention to exist now. We just need to update the language about eliciting, combining, and directing.
Mm-hmm. Now, you served on that task force about the Great Commission Resurgence. After having been through all of that, do you think that this kind of denomination is outmoded and outdated, or do you think that this is that we still have a task to undertake in that way?
You know, I really appreciate that question because it reminds me of a statement made years ago, and that is, if this did not exist, we would have to invent it. Mm. And, you know, I think every new generation comes along and says, we don't need all of this. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we need to ask those questions. If there's something we don't need, we need to get rid of it. Mm-hmm. But the reality is, it's kind of like, as you well know, many of these young churches get started. They get started with so much energy, they're against the man. And, yeah. and you know, they're going to be lean, mean. And then all of a sudden, they got kids, and now they have to have a nursery.
Yeah.
And now you got to have nursery policies. And now you're hiring staff. You got to have a personnel committee. And before you know it, all these non-denominational denominations kind of look like denominations.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Trying to get the mission, and for the purpose of having a more effective mission, not in adding to it and weighing it down.
You know, Ed Stetzer, frankly, has an interesting article in this month's issue of Christianity Today. Are denominations dead? No, not quite. And I think he basically comes down to a very healthy place, saying, you know, again, everyone is going to have to come up with some structure if you mean to do anything that's going to involve more than you. Mm-hmm. And that's where we are. Well, you know, if we were just going to be individual Baptists or individual Christians, we wouldn't need a denomination, but the fact is that's not the mode of Christianity we find, in which you have Christians working together. I do think, and this is something I want to throw out to you here, I do think that there's going to have to be a recovery of the church, mm-hmm. especially in terms of congregational identity, or the denominations aren't going to matter. What we have had, I think, is a problem, is that many Christians have identified more with the denomination than with the congregation, and I think that just doesn't fit New Testament Christianity. That won't work.
And I think that's changing quite a bit, because kind of those old cultural patterns of it's good for me to be a Baptist or a Presbyterian right. or a Lutheran, that's going away. So the people who actually are showing up in a church following Christ are more convictional about
that's
what
right.
they want to be. So that's going to have to change. Before long.
You know, one of the interesting things we've got going on, and we're talking about all these meetings coming this summer, you know, I kind of have to brace myself every summer because of so much bad news out of so many of these denominations.
Right.
The liberal Protestant denominations meet, and I do not mean to make light of this. It's just a tragedy. It's what doctrine can we forfeit this year? What basic principle of orthodoxy can we reject this year? And so you look at that and you say, well, if you're going to abandon the gospel, then let's pray those structures do die. Mm-hmm. But even within those denominations, there's some faithful Christians. You know, what do I say to those faithful Christians who are kind of stuck in many of those denominations?
Well, for some of them, I say give up and leave. I mean, right. there does come a point where you have to say, we're not able to do anything. When right. your denomination has gotten to the point of goddess worship, why are you even still there?
That's
it's
right.
time to move on. And there are other faithful brothers and sisters you can join with and cooperate with. But there are some where there is a possibility of success
that's right.
in turning those churches back around, and we ought to pray for and link arms with those.
You know, that's exactly the kind of argument I made in an article in Table Talk magazine last year, and I probably got as much response to that article as just about anything I've written, because a lot of people read that and thought I was talking about their denomination. I literally got emails from people saying, I know you were talking about my denomination. I'll say you're included, but the point is, you know, what I say to people is, if there's any opportunity for reformation, for a cleansing, for a recovery, then give yourself to it.
Yeah.
But if you are not willing to leave, then don't think your agenda really is the gospel.
And some of those denominations have become so bureaucratized and top-down, there's
That's
no
right.
way to turn them around. There's just no polity to do
That's
it.
That's exactly right. You may remember when John Shelton Reed was on our campus, I quote him all the time, an Episcopalian. And yet he was here, a great Southern historian, talking about the meaning of the conservative recovery of the Southern Baptist Convention. And so in public, I asked him, I said, why didn't that happen in the Episcopal Church? And he said, well, because the Southern Baptist Convention was recovered by a pitchfork rebellion. And he said, the problem is, in the Episcopal Church, we don't have anybody left with pitchforks. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. My guest today is Dr. Wilson Moore. The issue is denominationalism. When we come back, we're going to talk about what we should really expect out of a denomination, what we should hope for, and what we should not expect, what we shouldn't look for out of a denomination. Write me at mail@albertmoeller.com, at Twitter @AlbertMoeller or Moeller Radio. We'll be right back with more on the Albert Moeller Program.
You're listening to the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmohler.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. Live today, we're broadcasting from the floor of the exhibit hall at the Southern Baptist Convention. And what we're talking about, frankly, is American denominationalism, how we got here, prompted by an email I received from a listener to this program just saying, how in the world do we arrive here? And, of course, as we're looking at all these denominational meetings over the summer, it's a good time for us to consider this. My guest today is Dr. Russell Moore, Dean of the School of Theology and Vice President for Academic Administration at Southern Seminary. You know him well as you hear his voice on this program. I have to start out with a story, and it's going to sound like I'm telling this story to the advantage of the Baptists, so let me just warn you that, but you could actually transfer this just about any other way. The great Methodist evangelist Sam Jones was once in a Georgia town giving a series of revival meetings, and he had meetings for the ladies in the morning, and he had one woman who showed up in the back, and when he asked all the Methodists to raise their hand, all did but this one woman. And so he singled her out, a very young woman, and he said, ma'am, what are you? And she said, I'm a Baptist. And he said, why are you a Baptist? And she said, because all my folks are Baptists. My grandmother's a Baptist. My great-grandmother was a Baptist. My mother was a Baptist, and I'm a Baptist. And Sam Jones turned to her and said, well, ma'am, what if your great-grandmother was a fool, and your grandmother was a fool, and your mother was a fool? What would that make you? And she said, I don't know, a Methodist. Look at that. Like I say, it could be turned on just about any of us. But let me just point out that, you know, there are many people today whose own identity is basically because their grandparents were whatever that is. You know, I just want to say that's not a good answer.
No, and we love our Methodist listeners here on the Albert Mohler Program.
And that's why I pointed out it was their great evangelist who made that statement.
Yeah, and but of course, as you know, that is certainly changing. Yeah. There's just not as much of a motivation to just continue to go wherever your family's been for generations.
And there shouldn't be.
Although there is, I think, a little bit of a too much fluidity in saying, I'm just going to choose the church I'm going to go to on the basis of who's got the best children's program or who
That's
has
right.
the best
That's
music.
Right.
And so I just move from Presbyterian church to Lutheran church mm-hmm. to Baptist church to whatever, rather than saying, hey, I want to be with people who are going to be on mission with me in the same way and who have the same basic core of beliefs.
Yeah, the convictions are what I wanted to point to, because these denominations, by and large, some of them are ethnic in background. That's why we have some of the Baptist denominations, mm-hmm. you know, up in the north, where the Great Lakes states, you got the Swedish Baptists,
right.
you know,
mm-hmm.
in the heart of the nation, you got a lot of German Baptists, and that makes a lot of sense. We understand that, and we understand that kind of family identity as well. But, you know, in this day, in this postmodern age, when we're having to define what we believe, you know, that's where a lot of people are saying, you know, my denomination doesn't believe or no longer believes what I believe to be essential to the gospel. And that's what I want to say. Well, then, you know, you're not a prisoner of a denomination.
Right.
You need to be where you can faithfully follow Christ and hold to the full measure of conviction. We're talking about what you should get out of a denomination. You know, Russ, it may be slightly heretical here on the floor of the Southern Baptist Convention, but I want to say we should not get our identity
right.
from a denomination.
That's right. Should get it from your church.
That's
and
right.
And not the other way around. And if you do get it from your denomination, then what you're going to wind up with is a lot of disappointment, because Jesus didn't die for a bureaucracy. He died for his church.
That's right.
And so if you're not seeing the ultimate goal as being churches, you're not only not going to be effective, you're also going to walk away really spiritually shallow and dry.
Well, let's point out, just to take with that one issue of the church and its centrality, this is where you really come to understand the importance of denominations in this sense. Let's say you're going to plant a church. Mm-hmm. You're going to start a church. Well, you're going to have to make some fundamental decisions. Mm-hmm. How is this church going to be organized? Is it going to have elders? Is it going to be part of a presbytery? Is it going to have a bishop in terms of someone over several churches? You know, how are we going to do this? Whom are we going to baptize?
Right.
Are we going to baptize infants, or are we going to baptize only those who are new believers in the Lord Jesus Christ, coming by personal profession of faith? You know, the reality is that even if you don't want to name yourself, if you're faithful in conviction, you're going to get named.
Yeah, and even if you appoint only your own missionaries out of your own church, you just appoint your two missionaries out of your church, you're
That's
still
right.
going to be talking to other churches to say, hey, how do you do this?
And you better be how planting other thing? Churches.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
the New Testament model is churches that plant churches. And so, you know, the idea that you can just be, as you said, just an individual church and say that that's just where we're going to be, that's why independent Baptists, not to throw stones at their house, ended up banding together to have camps and Bible colleges.
Sure. Literature.
And that's right, the Sword of the Lord. Mm-hmm. That was a joint project, just because it turns out that we can't be as independent as we might like to think we can be.
Yeah.
And the reality is that for individual Christians, that's certainly true. That's why the New Testament understanding of a Christian is a Christian as a member of a congregation. And the reality is that we're just not as independent as we would sometimes like to think. And that's true in the New Testament. Look at the book of Acts. Look at churches taking offerings for other churches, praying for other churches, sending elders and leaders to other churches, praying for other churches. You know, independence is a great thing, so long as you mean it just doesn't quite mean as independent as it sounds. You're listening to the Albert Mohler Program. We'll be right back with more as we're talking about the reality of American denominational life. Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program, live in the Exhibition Hall of the Southern Baptist Convention, meeting in Orlando, Florida, where it is hot, hot, hot. And it's frankly unbelievably hot. And Southern Baptist must today be looking to next year, where we're going to be meeting the same week in Phoenix, Arizona. Evidently, we're expecting some hot events for the SBC. Adam is calling from State College, Pennsylvania, listening on WTLR. What are you thinking, Adam?
Well, just a little bit earlier, you talked about some people being more connected to the denomination than the church. And I know myself, I feel really connected with the CMA because of what A.B. Simpson set out to do. And yet I still feel as though sometimes the church isn't really doing what he set out to do with the denomination. So when do you decide to cut ties in that case?
You know, Adam, I appreciate your call. It seems like you're asking really two different questions, if I could kind of break it down a little bit, because it seems like on the one level you're saying, what happens when your church no longer really represents what it was established to represent, what the denomination was established to represent? And you mentioned the CMA, Christian Missionary Alliance, I'm sure you're talking about there. And the reality is that is a process that I think, just given Genesis 3, is writ large across American denominational life. That is the tendency and temptation to drift. And so what you may have to do is look for a congregation that hasn't drifted as others have, and maybe a denomination that holds your convictions that have not drifted as others have. But when do you decide that a church or denomination is not for you? I'll tell you, Adam, here's where I just want to make a plea to do that only on biblical and theological grounds, not on style and cultural and other grounds, not on cultural kinds of preferences and even organizational issues that aren't tied to theology and biblical doctrine. But if you are in a position where you are just not convictionally at home, then you really can't in good faith enter into the full life of the church or the denomination.
Well, that's exactly right. And I think also you have to, and it takes a good bit of subjectivity to figure this out,
right?
Realize what's the end game. Are you just kind of a gadfly in the denomination calling out, you all used to be really great? If that's the case, then it's time to move on. But if you really are able to have some influence to turn things around, because sometimes you have denominations that just are ignorant about what they ought to be doing, where they ought to go, and people can step up and have some influence and turn it around. You don't just walk out and leave. Try to be salt and light.
That's right. John just wrote in on Twitter to ask the question, is there anything we can do to combat the negative stigma attached to denominationalism?
Well, if your denomination is mean or is doing stupid things, then you can stop doing
it. You just might deserve that
you
stigma.
You might deserve it, yeah. You can stop doing those things. But otherwise, it's the same thing, I think, kind of just an American consumerist mentality that you're fighting against, and you're never going to be able to remove that without changing the root problem.
Well, and you know, I want to speak back to John for a minute. Let me say that sometimes denominations get kind of a bad rap because they have disagreements.
Yeah.
Well, that's where I want to come back and say, maybe there's a disagreement worth having.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what's worse is to be a part of a denomination ready to go off a cliff simply because they're not going to ask any questions. There's another thing that's behind this, and that is, let's just face it, there's a kind of anti-institutional bias that's just out there, and especially in some subcultures. But again, that just doesn't work for very long. Before you know it, everybody's got a retirement plan.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And you just keep splitting.
That's right. And you know, even in a day where we've moved so far beyond the kind of corporate denominationalism, and that really is something that's kind of dying in the past, the reality is that if people on mission, churches on mission, are going to have certain things they want to do together, and it's going to require certain common commitments, practices, and all the rest. But there's another interesting question that came in here. Fabio wrote in to ask, how can we overcome differences in worship styles between denominations?
Well, that really I don't think is a denominational issue. That's a church issue, and a denomination ought to reflect the diversity of what the churches are doing. And so in our denomination, for instance, you have right. churches that are very different in worship within boundaries. I mean,
right.
you know, sacrificing a goat on the Lord's Supper table is clearly theologically outside of our boundaries. But there's a lot of diversity between those churches. It would be more so-called contemporary and so-called traditional. That a denomination really ought not to be the one to decide that, don't you think?
Yeah, I hasten to add that that illustration you just used is not a matter of current debate, I know, amongst any American denominations. But
correct.
It certainly draws our attention to the reality you were pointing out. You know, I think when it comes to worship style, there are a couple other things here. You know, even in denominations that think they have solved that issue, institutionally, for instance, to take the Episcopal Church, they have a Book of Common Prayer.
Right.
They have a fully written out liturgy. But as you go from Episcopal Church to Episcopal Church, it's not going to sound the same way.
That's
it's
right.
not going to be done quite the same way. And I think this is where we need to come back and say, even church by church, there is a biblical definition of worship. But that biblical definition of worship includes language, includes music, includes an entire world of cultural symbolism. And the reality is that we represent different cultures and different
that's
languages.
Right.
And we should expect that's going to show up in worship. The issue is we shouldn't be scared about it. We shouldn't be frightened about it. We should celebrate
that's
it.
Right.
We should look forward to the marriage supper of the Lamb, where there are going to be men and women from every tongue, and every tribe, and every people, and every nation. And God evidently draws pleasure from that. So should his people.
Exactly. And the last thing we need is a pointy-headed denominational bureaucrat sending down worship conformity to all the churches. That's not...
That's right.
That arises organically from the bottom, not from the top.
It also reminds me, just on the other hand, you know, there was a cartoon in the New Yorker, I believe it was like 2 or 3 years
mm-hmm.
ago, in which there was a memo, and the guy opened the memo, sitting at the desk, and it said, be diverse. And it's
right.
just one of those things, you also can't send a directive down from the bureaucracy saying, be diverse.
Right.
Diversity is going to happen if indeed you're winning people to faith in the Lord Jesus Christ, you're leading them to a saving knowledge of Christ. They're coming in, and they're bringing all that they are. We
yeah.
want people to show up with all that they are. You know, there isn't a Christian language. There isn't a Christian culture.
That's right.
There isn't a Christian music.
Yeah.
And we ought to be the people who are glad to have people come in and share that with all of us. Another question that came in by Twitter, is it true that denominations are dinosaurs that are just destined to disappear?
Some of them sure are. And some of that big hulking bureaucracy
yeah.
certainly is. And that's why denominations are going to have to be leaner and more missional in the
yeah,
future.
Somewhere out there are the Berea tar pits of denominational
that's
life
right.
in which there are some lumbering giants who are headed out. On the other hand, let's be honest. There are some really healthy signs, and I'm very thankful for that. I'll tell you, in our own denomination, Russ, in the Southern Baptist Convention, here is the thing that brings me the greatest sense of hope. The younger you go in this denomination, the firmer the faith.
That's right.
The younger you go, the greater the commitment.
That's right.
Now, that has to be a sign of health.
That's
and,
right.
and that's just something that excites me. We're going to be back with final thoughts in just a moment. We're live here on the exhibition hall floor of the Southern Baptist Convention. And there are several thousand Southern Baptists who have coagulated together here in Orlando, Florida, where we are here to do some business, to hear preaching. We'll come back. We'll talk a little bit about that and remind ourselves of what it is that Christ would have us to do. We'll be right back with final thoughts with the Albert Mueller Program. Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. We are here on the floor of the Exhibition Hall of the Southern Baptist Convention, and what's going on yesterday and today is a pre-convention meeting known as the Pastors' Conference of the Southern Baptist Convention. Russ Moore, my guest and colleague today, preached this afternoon. What'd you have to say, Russ?
I was calling Southern Baptists to create an adoption culture where we would protect the fatherless in our churches and picture the gospel by adopting children, participating in foster care, and having ministry to orphans all over the world.
It has been a good meeting. It really
has been. It's been a great meeting. It's
and,
just the fellowship and there's the spirit in everything. It's really...
And our friend and pastor, Dr. Kevin Ezels, has done a magnificent
done a phenomenal job
putting this together. And I'm just very proud and thankful. I'm going to be preaching right after this. As a matter of fact, I'm headed right at the conclusion of this program over to preach. And I'm going to be preaching a high-risk sermon tonight, and I really have something on my heart I want to talk about. And I'm going to be talking to the pastors' conference of the Southern Baptist Convention about the dangers of an unregenerate ministry. And it's not that I walk around with a fear that it is so. It's that I walk around with the realization that we ought to be the people who are unembarrassed to talk about. Mm-hmm. The reality is we must be born again. Mm-hmm. And at the very heart of all that we know and all that we preach and all we believe is a conversionist theology. That is just central to who we are. So I'm looking forward to getting that in just a few minutes. Tomorrow we're going to have a special program. We're going to be taking questions from the floor here at the exhibition hall. And it's going to be interesting to see what these Baptists, I mentioned earlier, they were coagulated together. We'll see what they want to talk about tomorrow. And then on Wednesday, of course, it's Ask Anything Wednesday. We'll be doing the program live from here in Orlando, where I'll be for the remainder of the week. I'll be speaking at the Ligonier National Conference on Thursday and Friday and Saturday. And on Thursday and Friday, we'll be doing the program live from that meeting as well. We're on the road, and it's an exciting place to be as we're here in Orlando this week. And it's an exciting opportunity to talk with a live audience here and for those of you who called in and those who participated by Twitter. If you're not following us on Twitter, I just want to invite you to do that. You can follow Dr. Moore on Twitter by going to / Dr. D.R. Moore. You can follow me at Albert Moeller, just all one word, and for the program Moeller Radio. We are here in very, very warm Orlando, where a lot of Southern Baptists are gathered as different denominational folks be gathering elsewhere. My dear wife, Mary, is celebrating her almost 50th birthday today. It's not the 50th, she would have you to know. It is the almost 50th birthday. And I just want to say that I love her so much and am so appreciative of what she means to me. And she has graciously shared her birthday here at the Southern Baptist Convention with a few thousand of her closest friends every year. We'll be back tomorrow for a conversation with you, for intelligent conversation about the things that matter, in the next episode of the Albert Moeller Program. We'll see you then.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmoeller.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmoeller.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Moeller Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.